You're listening to Work in Progress. I'm Ramona Schindelheim, Editor-in-Chief of Working Nation. Work in Progress explores the rapidly changing workplace through conversations with innovators, educators, and decision-makers, people with solutions to today's workforce challenges. In early March, our Working Nation team was in Austin for the first in-person South by Southwest EDU conference since 2019. As part of the program, I sat down on the Cognizant Foundation podcast stage with three remarkable young women to discuss how they're forging a pathway into software development, a field that is still male-dominated. Take a listen.
I think we're ready. I'd like to see a packed room. Thank you, guys. And it's such a pleasure to see everyone here. Thank you for coming. I'm Kristen Titus. I head up the Cognizant Foundation, and we are so pleased to have sponsored the podcast stage this week. And we're equally excited to have partnered with Ramona Schindelheim, who you'll hear from in a moment, from Working Nation. We at the Cognizant Foundation work to prepare people of all ages for the jobs of today and tomorrow. And we've worked with Ramona and team at Working Nation to help tell the stories of those who've had transformative experiences and excited to share some of that with you today. With that, I'll hand over the mic to Ramona. Thank you, and excited to hear each of your stories.
As Kristen said, I'm Ramona Schindelheim. I'm the Editor-in-Chief of Working Nation. And Working Nation is a nonprofit news organization, and we're totally focused on solutions to today's workforce issues. So we look at stories about the skills gap. How do we close it? How do we make sure people get the types of training they need, whether it's through college or post-secondary career opportunities? But the jobs are changing. So how do we make sure people change with them and they get those skills? We are here to talk about expanding opportunities in tech. And the idea is that not everybody has the same access to these opportunities. So how do we make sure people who are in underrepresented communities, people who are not represented in the tech workforce in general, have those opportunities? And thanks to Cognizant Foundation, we've found some really great programs over the last couple of years, and this is a great chance to highlight them. So sitting next to me is Maria Contreras. She went through the Code to College program, and we'll hear a little bit more about her story in a moment, but she is a high school senior. She's 18 years old, and she already has a paid internship under her belt. Very, very impressive indeed. And next to her, Sage Lee. And Sage is 27, she just turned 27, and she went through the Turing School in Denver. And that is a 7-month program, now all online, and taught her how to code, and she had a paid apprenticeship. So we will talk about that. And then Kate Nichols. Kate is 32. Everybody gave me permission to use their age, by the way. I'm just not calling them out. She's 32, and she started her career as a teacher and decided that was not going to get her what she needed, so she went to Ada Developers Academy in Seattle, totally upended her life, went there and went to train for a new career, and she is now working as a curriculum manager at Hello World Software Development. So say hello to the panel. I'm going to start with Kate, because Kate started her career as a teacher here in Austin after you got a BA, right?
Yes, I did.
And what was your, were you a BA in teaching?
So I did a combination of studio art and education here at UT Austin.
You went into teaching from that, correct?
I did.
Mm-hmm. And how long did you teach?
I was in the classroom for 6 years.
And when we had a conversation earlier last week, you were saying something in particular in your personal life made it so that you said, I can't achieve my financial goals. Right. So talk a little bit about your teacher career and what made you decide to become a software programmer.
Sure. So I absolutely loved my time in the classroom, my time as an educator. Walking away from that was maybe the most difficult decision I've ever made. But personally, there were things in my family with my own debt where you know, increasing living cost, where it was a bit of a concern looking ahead that, you know, would I be able to achieve the things I wanted to achieve on a teaching salary? And full disclosure.
Well, one of the things you said too is that you were looking ahead and you said, I want to be able to buy a house at one point.
Right.
And unfortunately, and I'm sure we have plenty of educators here, they don't necessarily, those jobs don't necessarily pay well. And for a full-time salary, even working full-time. So, and then you decided you wanted to go learn software development. Why did you decide that? Why did you pick that career?
I had become fascinated by computing and software development over the years in the classroom, primarily because students would come to me and ask me questions like, what is the internet? And I would say, a series of tubes? I don't know. And so I started to learn more so I could answer these questions, sponsoring coding clubs. That was my entry into this CS world. I found Ada Developers Academy just through Google searches.
So you did know how to use the internet.
I did. Eventually I did. And then, you know, started Ada's curriculum is fully open source, accessible to anyone. I started my journey there learning Ruby. The reason I think I chose software development in particular was because it would provide, I knew it would provide me with a powerful set of skills that I could leverage for a job that would allow me to achieve those financial goals that I have and have had while also staying in education.
Yeah, and Ada, for people who don't know Ada Developers Academy, it's for women and gender diverse people, and it's totally tuition free in Seattle, which is an amazing thing, especially when you want to change your career.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal program. I highly recommend anyone who's interested to look it up. It's rapidly expanding. When I attended, which was in 2019. It has since expanded to DC and Atlanta. It's a phenomenal organization, and I also had a paid internship at a big tech company in Seattle, and they also provided me access to a very, very low interest microloan that allowed for my partner and I to move to Seattle. It's not a cheap city, but that loan financed us to get up there and get started and relieved some pressure.
And we will talk about the paid internships after we go through here, but it was Zulily, right?
Yes.
Yeah, it was. Great. And Sage, now you got a BA in environmental policy here, or in California.
Yeah. So I got my BS, actually, in environmental policy in undergrad, and sustainability was kind of my passion. I would say it still is my passion. And I ended up moving to Denver to do environmental campaign work. I thought that I was going to fix all of our environmental problems through politics, and quickly learned that maybe that wasn't my thing, because it's not what it's like cracked up to be. And so I started jumping around. I had a lot of different jobs, all kind of at sustainability or sustainable related companies that had sustainable missions. I was a cashier at Whole Foods. I worked in a warehouse at a sustainable packaging company. And then right before I made the switch to tech, I was working at, I was planning events for a tech company that had an environmental mission.
So you did not see that as a career pathway, I guess.
No, yeah. I was kind of floundering, for lack of a better term.
And how did you find, now Turing, I think at the time you started it, it was still in person, right?
I applied thinking it was going to be in person, but I started in March 2020, so we all know how that went. So I ended up doing the program all virtually.
And it's a 7-month intensive program, and now it's all online.
Yeah, it's all online.
And it's remained online, so it's not just in Denver.
Yeah. So you can join the program no matter where you are in the States.
And you did a paid internship at Handshake?
Handshake. So I now work for a company called Handshake, and I started my time with them as an apprentice software engineer.
Great. And we will, I want to talk more in depth about what that apprenticeship program and experience is like. But Maria, you know, I've already said you're 18 now, but you started your coding experience in an after-school program, Code to College. How old were you when you did that?
I was a sophomore in high school, so 15. It was very random. I was just walking down the hallway to drink water one day, and I saw this flyer that was like, join Code to College, learn how to code, internship. I was like, nice, sounds cool. So one day after school, they set up a meeting, and they just, some Code to College volunteers came to the cafeteria, and they talked to us about what this program was about. They said that twice a week after school, we would meet in a room and they would teach us how to code. And this could probably lead us to us getting some paid internships with like these very nice and big tech companies. And I thought it was great. At that moment, I knew absolutely nothing about coding at all. I had just come from Venezuela like maybe 6 months ago. That's where my accent comes from, if you were curious. And then, yeah, I signed up for it. They said that it didn't matter that I didn't know anything about coding. Literally, the only thing I knew was what I saw in the movies of people hiding behind a computer, like typing really fast. And I was like, yeah, I want to do that. So I went to the first class probably 1 week after that meeting, and it was great. They introduced us to Python, I think, was the first language we learned. And it was very simple. I think the first class we learned how to put like shapes in a website or like change the color or something. But I thought it was pretty great because like I saw myself like manipulating a website by myself. It's like something I never knew how to do. It was really great. I guess it provided me the opportunity to start something that I never thought I would be capable of doing.
Part of Code to College, which is based here in Austin, their whole mission is to expose people who may not have been exposed to this, whether it's an underrepresented group, women, low income, people who, you know, maybe don't see this career as for them because they don't have the role models or they don't have the, you know, access to it. So for all of you, kind of a question to you, did you find the program helped you get through maybe that hurdle? Because there's not a lot of women in software development still.
Yeah, I would say Code to College definitely helped me get into tech. I probably would have been involved somehow with technology, but not to the way that Code to College allowed me to. I did the program sophomore year, the entire year, and then junior year I did one more advanced program. By the end of my junior year, I was already doing this project in which I was kind of creating a program of my own. I also did summer boot camp. So by the end of my junior year, I knew a lot of languages. I knew my way around coding. And then, thanks to Code to College, I was given the opportunity to intern at Indeed. This is something that usually only college students can do. You like require some kind of college education to get even the chance to do the interview. So thanks to Code to College, I was able to get that interview. I, of course, studied really hard for it, did probably 1,000 sample questions in all of the different apps. And yeah, after, I think it was a 3-hour long coding interview, I was able to get that internship. And of course, since then, my knowledge of coding and programming grew exponentially. But I don't think that without Code to College, I would have had that opportunity, that chance to like be so invested in tech. Like at this point, I'm going to do 2 majors in college, and one of them is going to be computer science, and it is mostly thanks to this program that I took that decision.
Yes, great. And Sage, we've talked before, and you were talking to me about some of the support. So again, to that question of women in the industry, you had some mentorship opportunities when you were at Turing.
Yeah, I did. I had a mentor that I met with the whole time I was there, and I will say, I'm mixed, my mom is white, my dad is black. I grew up with my white mom in my white community, and I have always almost been the only black person in the room, whether it comes to school or work or whatever. And as a kid, especially in high school, computer science was nothing I ever even considered because I had never seen a black woman code on a computer. And especially as I grew it as an adult, when I was looking to make a shift in my career, I was like, oh, I want to have to be like an expert in math. I had to have studied it all through high school and through college. There's no way I could make that jump. I didn't know that there were opportunities like this that existed. And when I started at Turning, yeah, I had a woman of color as my mentor that I met with the whole time. I had a Black woman as my teacher for part of my schooling. I met with our Black identity group that we had as students at the school, and I was opened up to this whole new world where there's people that look like me that also code, which is fabulous. And I think that having that community definitely helped me ease me into the tech world.
And Kate, you specifically went to a program that was for women and gender diverse people. How did they help you get through those first steps of coding and then get to the apprenticeship?
Sure. So Ada provided tremendous support. There was also a tremendous amount of work on everyone's end to accomplish the goals of the program. But, you know, students, folks were provided with mentors, tutors, all, of course, free access. The community is so strong. There's such a strong network of Ada grads out in the world that nearly, you know, 100% of the cohort and then previous cohorts and cohorts since, you know, immediately step into SDE1 roles, software engineer roles at major companies that Ada's partnered with, such as Google, Amazon. So many folks are, you know, entered there. I took a slightly different pathway because all along the plan, due to family obligations here, all along I was intended to come right back to Texas. So when the program was wrapping up, I was able to start networking, and having the Ada name, the certificate, the internship company I was with, that did lend some legitimacy, I think, to me as an applicant when I started to reach out to various ed tech companies and founders here in Texas.
So what was your apprenticeship like? I mean, you're walking into Zulily, and what did they have you do? Work side by side with another software program? How did that work?
Sure. So I was fully a member of a software team there at Zulily and in their office. I was on a UI team, and previously I'll also preface that everyone in Ada does interview with various companies. So these companies do select you. Everyone is guaranteed an internship, but you're not, you can't necessarily pick. I think you could call it both. Like it's an internship and an apprenticeship kind of combined, but you know, it's full time working there on the team. There was no differentiation between, oh, this is our,
you got to jump right in.
Exactly. Yeah. I was jumped right in full time. I worked on software that did supply chain management. I actually got flown out to some of the supply chain warehouses to look at the software being implemented and collaborate on ways that it could be improved. I was fully immersed for sure, and they were quite supportive.
And Sage, you went to Handshake where you ended up working. And did you have a similar experience?
Yeah, I had a similar experience. At Turing, almost all of our learning is project-based, and we are building apps as we're learning in groups similar to what you would experience in a job on a software team. And so when I was hired, that was an understanding that I knew the drill, that I knew how to work in an agile workflow. I knew how to work with my fellow software developers. And so similarly, I was put right in. I mean, there was an understanding that I was new to my career and that maybe I would need a little bit more mentorship. But other than that, I was doing the same work that my coworkers were doing.
It sounds Ada and Turing, and I'm sure Code to College, partnered with some really good companies that had, it seems that they had that mission in mind, that they were not going to treat you just as someone to get coffee, right? For you, Maria, I always take away from our conversation, previous conversation, was you were in high school, and you tell us about when they asked you guys to tell everybody, your colleagues, where you were from.
Oh, yeah, that was interesting. I was the only high schooler there. I think the youngest person after me was a college sophomore or junior, probably. So it was really interesting. Everybody was super impressed. And I was feeling a little bit of imposter syndrome that I was there. It was like they were coming from schools like UC Berkeley, UT Austin, Stanford. And I was coming from a high school in South Austin. So it was really interesting. However, it was very helpful. I don't think everybody treated me differently because of my difference in experience, like along with my other interns, colleagues. I knew that I didn't have the experience they had. So what I did to catch up, I would work the 8 hours from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. As soon as I clocked out of work, I would do other programs like Code Academy, like YouTube tutorials. I would look down libraries and problems. So like after work, I would try to expand my knowledge as much as I could so that I would be more prepared for the next day. And that really helped me because I was learning both inside my job, like doing the projects I was assigned to do. Like I, as well as the other interns, we all were given like a task to complete by the end of the summer. Mine was tailored towards editing the interview platform that Indeed had. So basically the Indeed website, if you're not very probably familiar, that Indeed helps people get jobs. So they, right now or last summer, they were starting out an interview platform so that recruiters were able to interview candidates on the Indeed website. So like that would like eliminate the need for a third-party user like Zoom or other, you know, online calling platforms. Mm. So my job was to change the UI of this interview platform so that it would be more efficient and it would suit better the needs of our recruiters. It would make the process easier. So I was doing a lot of research, like A/B tests, see what kind of change worked better, what gave the least questions to the developers. And yeah, I just made the whole platform more efficient for the users.
Really sounds like, you know, as you all have said, you just were thrown right in there. So where are you now? I mean, how many coding languages can you speak, and are you still learning more, or speak, or write, type? What's the correct language?
I think any of that works.
Thank you.
Yeah, totally. So we moved back to Texas in January 2020 when I graduated from the program. The next day, I started working for a company based here in Austin called Hello World. It is a company that has developed a SaaS platform to teach computer science in 3rd through 12th grade. We also have in-school programs and partnerships in AISD here in Austin, and a lot of districts in New York, California, throughout Texas, and it's rapidly expanding. So I joined because I met the founder, found that we had our ideas and beliefs around education kind of mirrored each other. And so from there, we could just hit the ground running with redesigning the platform, building the curriculum up, and ensuring that we were building a product that was focused on equity. Teaching computer science is political, and it does need to include learning about social justice, AI, things like that. So it's been an honor to develop this content, and today we've served about around 15,000 students, and it's growing. And so I'm continually learning new programming languages because I'm overseeing the courses that are being developed. So my title is curriculum manager. So we have a team of folks who are writing the content, and I'm supporting them, editing it, looking at projects in REPL, looking at how the code's written, how clean it is. And so it's been an incredible opportunity. I'm excited to see where we go next. This week we just got endorsed by the College Board for our two AP courses. Yeah. that we spent the last, since like the first week I started, I was like, we have to build an AP curricula because a good one doesn't exist. Good ones do exist, I should say. Very good ones exist, but they're missing that piece of equity. They're not, our platform's browser-based, and we're designing to students that us as teachers had in our classrooms. So I'm really excited about that. That's been my greatest achievement, I guess, is that now we have this AP-endorsed curricula.
Great. And Sage, at Handshake, you are also working in education.
Yeah, I am. So Handshake, for those of you that don't know, is a platform that helps higher education students connect with employers, apply for jobs, go to career fairs, and our mission really is to democratize the opportunity to jobs. So that way, whether you don't have a network or you don't have the socioeconomic background that would provide you with a lot of the tools we have in our toolbox to get a job, you have access to employers and you have access to jobs that you're qualified for. So I really love working at Handshake just because it's a mission-driven company, but you asked kind of where we are now from where we were at our programs, and so I was a back-end engineer when I went through Turing. There's two programs, a back-end and a front-end, and so I learned Ruby on Rails, the language and framework that I started with, but I think something that's really important that the program does for us is teach you how to be a learner. You don't just learn the one language that you learn that getting into tech, you're gonna be a lifelong learner. You're gonna have to keep developing your skills over time. So when I did my apprenticeship at Handshake, I went in knowing that most of my skills were on the back end side of things, but now I'm what you would consider full stack. So I do both back end and front end work, and I'm still learning every day. But I'm now an associate software engineer for them. I did my apprenticeship for 6 months and was evaluated, and they hired me on full time. So,
and I want, yes, we can applaud both of you, all of you. And I want to point out too, Kate, you have achieved that financial dream of yours. You did buy a house, right?
I did.
Yeah.
It's a miracle.
And yeah. You told me, I think your salary doubled, right?
Yes, correct.
And Sage, you say you're not shy about saying how much money you made before you went in.
Yeah, I'm not shy anymore, let me tell you. But
shout it out.
Yeah, so I was making $40,000 what I was doing before, and taking the risk to take 7 months off of school, maybe longer, to find a job and pay for the tuition was a little bit scary for me. But I paid $20,000 for my tuition at Turing, but 6 months later I got a job that offered me $90,000. So I think it was worth it.
Good return on your investment. Yeah. Yes. And Maria, you're not there yet, but you just got a full ride to Rice.
I did.
Woo-hoo!
And do you think your internship played a role in that?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I don't think they get a lot of applicants that get a software developer internship as a junior in high school. I'm very involved with my school as well, and I think those two combined really helped me stand out in the application process. And I'm very excited about it. I'm going to major in bioengineering, which also involves a lot of coding, and computer science when I get there. Possibly consider a minor, but I don't know if that's possible.
If we've learned anything is that Maria's an underachiever. We're never going to see her again. This is it. Yeah. I do want to take a moment before we say goodbye. If anybody has any questions, we have a mic. We are happy to bring it over. Kyle, the lovely Kyle, is happy to bring it over to you.
Thanks. I'm a director of curriculum and learning, and I'm building a team, and I want my team to be diverse and female and proportional to like the representation of the world. And so how do I write job descriptions that attract diverse and female candidates?
Maybe I could speak to that as a fellow curriculum person. I would say definitely emphasize front and center that what you just expressed, that willingness and openness, and not just that you're willing and open to hiring diverse candidates, but it's a priority. And just stating that, I think, goes a long way. I would also encourage you to look for folks who may not have a conventional or, you know, a four-year degree or a C, or whatever. Presumably it's ed tech related or... Okay, so, you know, scouting out programs like ADA, like HighSpot, for those graduates. And I don't know if y'all have any other suggestions.
That's a good point, though, is that, and a lot of tech companies are dropping that four-year requirement, and it can be a barrier because we've talked about it at Working Nation that there are AI programs out there that, you know, the first thing they ask you, do you have a four-year degree? And if you don't, you don't go on to the next round. So looking for people with that diverse training is a very important answer, I think.
Yeah, and I want to underscore what was already said, that being transparent, because I think there's a lot of companies and initiatives out there that are trying to diversify right now, and there's improvement to be made everywhere. And as long as you're transparent about what your goals are, and not that you just want to diversify, but why and what are you doing besides hiring me to make that happen. And I think also for me as a candidate, it's one thing if you're hiring entry-level folks to positions at your company that diversify your demographics. But if I go on LinkedIn and I see that there's higher-level folks that are also diversifying your employee pool, that's really putting your money where your mouth is, in my opinion, because... You know, going into a company, I want to be able to have a mentor. I want to have a sponsor higher up at the levels of the company that I can relate to in that way. So yeah, that's what I would say.
You know, to that point too, just to say one of the criticisms in the, you know, kind of the DEI, let's hire minority, let's hire underrepresented, is not making that pathway within the company for that retention. So to see people who have gone on from that entry-level job would be an important message.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Did you have any thoughts?
Well, I haven't really been looking out.
You're not looking for work yet? Okay.
Not yet.
You got four more years.
Yeah. But I do agree with both of those points. Seeing people that already work at the company that possible candidates can relate to would really help them be less intimidated or like more empowered and willing to go through that process, because it makes them realize that it is possible.
First of all, love this panel. I was someone who was very intimidated by programming, taught myself some programming because I felt FOMO that everyone was doing it. And that was the most transformative experience I've had in my life. So currently I'm an MBA student at MIT trying to figure out how do I teach soft skills or technology. I'm curious about your experiences about how do you kind of develop that, especially at a boot camp, especially at kind of a non-traditional kind of way of learning programming. I'm trying to figure out how do we help kind of high-level ICs transition into that manager role and support them in their growth in becoming leaders in the technology space and not just someone who just programs and completes JIRA tickets.
My answer would be, I think I'm in an interesting place because I did a program where most of the students I was working with were coming from non-traditional backgrounds. They were coming from other sectors where maybe they had time to develop those kinds of skills that you're talking about. But I would say the most important thing for me coming out of my program, when I had a tenuous time working with my team while I was building something or, meeting new people or anything like that, is remembering that everybody is a different type of learner and everybody is a different type of worker. And what might be really easy for you to pick up, reading in a book or documentation on a website, somebody else might need to see visually, and somebody else might need some more time to digest it, and making sure that there are those spaces and those pathways for all the people that you're working with, I think is definitely something important to think about when you're thinking about soft skills.
So I think my first thought with that would be to just really to not discount the person's past experience and really digging deep for what soft skills they've already been using and leveraging in their own work or lives previously or concurrently as they're studying software. I think once tech realizes how amazing Scrum masters are, teachers are as Scrum leaders, like, it's over. So recognizing that, like, all learning is valid and purposeful, even if it doesn't come with a certificate or recognition. And then apart from that, fostering relationships with mentors, facilitating connections with mentors for folks to have mentors who look like them, who come from backgrounds like them, is invaluable. And what I've witnessed in the ADA network is that folks, you know, who, you know, develop these mentorships, they're able to kind of rise through the ranks a little bit more quickly. Because I think that they're fostering those soft skills at like an accelerated rate.
Yeah, I think my only input would be to expand on Sage's point. It's important to give them like different ways for them to learn. Like right now there's 1,000 different ways in which you can learn how to code, and like given just different options for different types of learners. It's what worked for me. For example, it doesn't work very well just by reading a library or like the terms of a programming language. For me, it works better to see people actually implemented the theory behind it, if that makes sense.
Hi. My name is Becky. I'm from IDEO, a design company, and I lead a portfolio focused on expanding access to learning and work. We heard a little bit about kind of taking the leap to do this program, and I'm curious what helped push you over the edge or make that decision to just go for it and also stick with it when it was hard?
Go ahead, Kate.
Getting accepted into ADA is what did it for me. I was really, really scared to even apply. And I knew about the program for several years before I even did apply because of imposter syndrome. And so just making that jump, I was able to do so because I had the support of my partner and friends and community, and that's also the only way I got through the program, or not the only way, but foundational, that support. So I think that's crucial for anyone making that jump, and if they don't happen to have that support, if there's some way that the organization who wants those kind of folks to apply, if they can build in resources to provide that support for applicants, then that's something ADA's really pushed for. Now there's, for example, for camps they have, they'll offer childcare for folks to come and learn, just learn to dip their toes in. You know, they'll offer, like I was saying, mentors with folks who look like them and come from backgrounds like them. And, you know, they give the applicants some choice over, you know, who that person may be. And also having access and creating open source environments in tech that more people can access is crucial.
Yeah, are you on it? Okay. I just wanted to expand on that point. It is, for me, it was crucial to have a mentor. It's something that Code to College is really good about. just having someone to support you even when you don't have any idea of what's going on. The volunteers at Code to College were able to stay with you even after their time was to help you really understand and answer any questions that you may have. And they also taught you what it would be like to have a career in tech. So I guess it is really important to have that personal connection from someone that has already gone through what you went through to really help you push through and make that decision to stick in the tech industry, even when, you know, it's male-dominated or, like, mostly white people. So, yeah, just having a person, it's what really helped me.
Yeah, and I'll say before I made the switch, I was in a position that I was really frustrated by, and I think that all of my mental potential on the daily, on my daily task was not being utilized. I was frustrated because I knew I could do more than what I was doing, and I, you know, had built up this energy that, you know, I was so willing, I was so determined, I was ready to do something maybe a little bit more technical. And I just remember thinking, if only somebody would just show me, if somebody would just put me in the position and teach me on the job, I could do it. I know I could do it. And I was working at a tech company at the time, and all of the people who were doing the technical work were white men. None of them looked like me. And I thought making that jump, you know, would be something that I would have to sacrifice a lot for. And I actually ended up running into a friend that was a cashier with me at Whole Foods, and he was a software engineer. And I was like, we were just checking out people's pineapples. Like, how did you get from point A to point B in such a short amount of time? Like, we were just there. And he was like, oh, I did this boot camp. And so similar to what the other girls were saying, you know, knowing somebody who finished and got there was what, you know, made me take the initial jump, because I, you know, knew that person and had trusted that person. And then while I was doing the program, Turing does a really good job at continually making sure that we're connecting with alumni, whether that's meeting with them on panels or mentor sessions, or like I did mock interview sessions with a lot of alumni, and seeing people successfully get through the program, you know, gave me the juice that I needed to push through, because I knew that it was possible. And I was also seeing people that had similar backgrounds to me who had no experience in computer science, had no experience in coding, and I realized that it was something that I could do too. So,
I think we have another question here.
Two right here. Hi everyone, my name is Joshua Elder. I'm with the Siegel Family Endowment. And so similar to the question about risk, we do a lot of funding on programs similar to this workforce development. But I'm interested specifically, Sage, you talked about making 40K, made the investment of 20K, now doubled your salary. What made you kind of take that risk of the financial burden and this investment, knowing that it would pay off? And what advice do you have for programs and funders to help reduce the risk of costs? Because that's oftentimes a barrier to access to these types of programs.
Yeah. So I'll say, initially for me, I was working in a position where there was nowhere to go. There was no higher up other than being a manager, and there was no career opportunity in the position that I was in. So I knew there wasn't really going up from where I was, and I really wanted to find a new field where I knew there was some sort of ladder to climb. There was, you know, there was opportunity for me to grow in whatever field I chose next, and I knew that there was a possibility for that in tech. And I will say, you know, obviously taking that risk, you know, 20K is not, you know, it's a big chunk of change. And I took out loans for the amount. A lot of the students at Turing take out loans. I know the school has recently been accredited, so there's even more financial aid that's available for students. And in all honesty, I took the risk because the numbers don't lie. And, you know, a majority of the people who go through the program get a job after a month, and they're making livable salaries, not even livable salaries, but high salaries. And so for me, it was worth the risk, because I knew that I could get help with financial aid, and I knew myself, and I was going to get a job after. That was my goal. So I don't know if that really answers your question, but yeah, that was my experience.
This is just something I stumbled upon scrolling through social media one day. I found there are some programs in which you can get trained to be a software developer, and you don't pay your tuition until you get a job. So I don't know how, true or...
those exist
or
in
honest
share agreements.
That is, but I think that's something that would make taking the risk very, way easier. If there's nothing to lose, I feel people would be willing or more eager to make that jump.
I think we have one more question before we wrap up. Yeah.
Yes, thank you. So I'm with the Hispanic Federation, so we focus mostly on low-income Latino families across the country and trying to get them into the tech sector. We're new to building out this program, so I'm curious, do you have any sort of credentials or certifications, each of you?
Does your program come with a credential?
Right, industry-specific certificates.
I believe I did get a certificate when I finished.
Matt is over here. He's shaking his head yes.
Yes, I got a certificate. But honestly, my ambiguous answer comes from the fact that I wasn't hired because I had a certificate. I was hired because when I did the technical interview, I could do the work. And
you had the apprenticeship, and so people saw that you could do the work.
Yeah. Yeah, so the piece of paper and the title that I got after finishing the program wasn't what put the nail in the coffin. It was the fact that I could show my work.
Yeah, just to echo that, I did receive a certificate from Ada, but just what you were saying, having the technical interview skills was crucial. During my lunch breaks when I was working for Zulily, I would practice whiteboarding with a group and whiteboarding for technical interviews, and it was me being like, what is recursion? And also senior engineers who were like, oh, I forgot all this stuff because you don't really use it day to day. And we were all in that together. And so just having, whiteboarding skills, technical skills, giving folks access to websites like LeetCode, HackerCode, so they can start practicing those kinds of problems is gonna put them leaps and bounds ahead. I think even of some four-year CS grads from anecdotally just what I've heard. So giving them access to books, resources, and online memberships so they can practice those problems and just nail them.
Personally, I didn't even have a high school diploma when I got my internship. So I only had 150 lead code questions that I memorized and I knew how to solve. So I could answer very fast and efficiently every single question I was asked in my technical interview. I don't really think you need that anymore to be successful in tech at this point.
And before we go, I want to point out Matt Casimir, who's the Turing School founder, and Matt Stevenson, Code to College. They're both here too. So I thank you very much for coming in and also training these wonderful people. So the other thing I want to say before we go is Maria, as we keep pointing out, she's a senior in high school. And she asked me to give her something. And I have right here, she needed this. She had to take the day off from school. So this is an excuse for her absence that says Maria Contreras was unable to attend class today because she was speaking at South by Southwest EDU. So here it is. If they have any questions, come back to me.
Thank you.
Okay. I do want to thank you all, Maria, Sage, Kate, and everybody at Cognizant Foundation for having us here to do the Work in Progress podcast. It'll be out in a couple of weeks. Look for us wherever you get your podcasts and at workingnation.org. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
This episode of Work in Progress was recorded live at the South by Southwest EDU conference in Austin. I'm Ramona Schindelheim, Editor-in-Chief of Working Nation.